Going farther into his pile of notes, Hank said, Jerry Fabin. Well, we'll write him off. NAC. The boys down the hall say Fabin told the responding officers on the way to the clinic that a little contract man 3 feet high, legless, on a cart, had been rolling after him day and night. But he never told anybody, because if he did, they'd freak and get the hell out, and then he'd have no friends, nobody to talk to. Yeah, Fred said stoically. Fabin has had it. I read the EEG analysis from the clinic. We can forget about him. Whenever he sat facing Hank and did his reporting thing, he experienced a certain deep change in himself. Afterward was when he usually noticed it, although at the time he sensed that, for a reason, he assumed a measured and uninvolved attitude. Whatever came up and whoever it was about possessed no emotional significance to him during these sessions. At first, he had believed it to be the scramble suits that both of them wore. They could not physically sense each other. Later on, he conjectured that the suits made no actual difference. It was the situation itself. Hank, for professional reasons, purposefully played down the usual warmth, the usual arousal in all directions. No anger, no love, no strong emotions of any sort would help either of them. How could intense natural involvement be of any use when they were discussing crimes, serious crimes, committed by persons close to Fred, and even, as in the case of Luckman and Donna, dear to him? He had to neutralize himself. They both did. Him more so than Hank. They became neutral. They spoke in a neutral fashion. They looked neutral. Gradually it became easy to do so, without prearrangement. And then afterward, all his feelings seeped back. Indignation at many of the events he had seen, even horror in retrospect. Shock. Great overpowering runs for which there had been no previews, with the audio always up too loud inside his head. But while he sat across the table from Hank, he felt none of these. Theoretically, he could describe anything he had witnessed in an impassive way, or hear anything from Hank. For example, he could offhandedly say, Donna is dying of hap and using her needle to wipe out as many of her friends as she can. Best thing here would be to pistol whip her until she knocks it off. His own check. If he had observed that or knew it for a fact. Or, Donna suffered a massive vasoconstriction from a Mickey Mouse LSD analog the other day and half the blood vessels in her brain shut down. Or, Donna is dead. And Hank would note that down and maybe say, who sold her the stuff and where's it made? Or, where's a funeral and we should get license numbers and names? And he'd discuss that without failing. This was Fred. But then later on, Fred evolved into Bob Arctor, somewhere along the sidewalk between the Pizza Hut and the Arco gas station, regular now $1.02 a gallon. And the terrible colors seeped back into him, whether he liked it or not. This change in him as Fred was an economy of the passions. Firemen and doctors and morticians did the same trip in their work. None of them could leap up and exclaim each few moments. They would first wear themselves out and be worthless, and then wear out everyone else, both as technicians on the job and as humans off. An individual had just so much energy. Hank did not force this dispassion on him. He allowed him to be like this, for his own sake. Fred appreciated it. What about Arctor? Hank asked. In addition to everyone else, Fred in his scramble suit naturally reported on himself. If he did not, his superior, and through him the whole law enforcement apparatus, would become aware of who Fred was, suit or not. The agency plants would report back, and very soon he, as Bob Arctor, sitting in his living room smoking dope and dropping dope with the other dopers, would find he had a little 3-foot-high contract man on a cart coasting after him, too. And he would not be hallucinating, as had been Jerry Fabin.